Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Hey, thanks for being here. It's Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe on The Advertising Show. It's being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. As always, we promise a great show, and always we deliver. Shamin Abbas with us here in just a few moments, our activist for excellence. A new media overload is what we're talking about today. A little bit later on in the show, Jean Bliss gives us her customer experience about the company called W.L. Gore. Not to mention a very special guest out of Washington, D.C. Brendan Hodgson is Senior Vice President for Digital Corporate and Public Affairs of North America for Hill & Knowlton. And we'll tell you more about Brendan here in just a few moments. And we'll have him on for three segments with us here at the Advertising Show. Good to be here. What do you have there, Brad?
Well, you know, I've had I guess we've all experienced a few weeks ago, with the passing of Senator Kennedy. And, you know, the media, they tend to latch on to some phrase or word that with every, you know, major media coverage event and with Well, with Senator Kennedy, it was he was laying in repose. And it's like every time I turn, he's in repose. And I hadn't, you know, it's like, well, when I pass away, I just want to be in pose. I don't want to be in repose.
You don't want to do repose? Okay, that's
no,
fine.
No, and I Googled that to find out what it was. No, I didn't yet, but it was, they kept repeating, he's in repose, he's in repose. It's like, nah, they used to just say that you're showing your respects and he's in the rotunda or in the church or in the library or wherever he happens to be. But the new word here in a few weeks ago was repose.
Actually, it was repose Massachusetts, Brad, but that's okay.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, it was a sad time. And I learned a lot about, not that it was breaking news, but I learned a lot about Edward Kennedy's background. Some we knew about, others we didn't know about. And he's a great man.
Bottom line is he left a lot of really cool things behind. His legacy is very strong and also very unifying as well. And he certainly did come from an incredible family. And let's hope that, they said that, you know, Camelot is over. It's like, no, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Doesn't have to.
No, it doesn't have to be over, but, it was sad to see of his passing as well. I suppose good that he didn't suffer that long with a brain tumor. So. And welcome to the medical show here. On the,
Right. And we'll be having a blood test next segment. And
a blood test? I'm out of here. They say the recession is coming to a close. They say the recession is almost over. That's not true. But basically what they're suggesting here, and this is a story, it says pop-up stores pop up as an inexpensive way to build buzz. Why temporary stores are picking up steam. And says what to consider before trying your own. This is an article out of Advertising Age. And it's basically saying a few years ago when cheap real estate was scarce, pop-up stores were a major investment. Now that's not true. Brands using these interim spaces as a mean to create buzz, test new concepts, or even evaluate a new neighborhood or a city. What a great idea. Well, temporary stores first began popping up with some regularity in 2003. Sky-high rents and a lack of available space made them a massive undertaking for the brands. Now, they're being viewed as logical and even an inexpensive marketing tool. That is, if you can find, a landlord that would agree with that concept, because a lot of these landlords are holding out. They'd rather have nothing than a little bit of something, I guess. But it's Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe here on The Advertising Show. Back in just a minute, we've got, of course, Brendan coming up here in just a moment. And right now, it's Shamin Abbas. Let's take a listen.
And now, it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
New media overload. Enough already. It often seems futile to keep up with all the new information and news that appears online every day. And perhaps it is. No human being with a job and a life could possibly monitor and actually absorb everything online that is of personal and professional interest, whether you read it, listen to it, or watch it. Yet there are tools of the trade that can help you monitor major trends and meet your specific information needs. Between social media sites and aggregation tools, you can much more easily digest the massive amounts of information available. There are one-stop shops like Bloglines, an internet news aggregator that publishes its information using RSS that pushes information from web publishers to Blogline subscribers. Most of the news and information sites you know make RSS feeds available to their readers. And you can use this RSS aggregator to simplify by letting it combine information from hundreds of websites into a single display. Social bookmarking sites are another way to find interesting information that you may not be aware of. Mix is a social news service, and Delicious and Dig are social bookmarking sites. With social news sites, navigate first to what interests you. If a title or description catches the eye, read it and perhaps add its RSS feed to your Bloglines page. Social bookmarking sites are different. You can search via the tags the source added to the text to improve its searchability. This is a great way to find out what other people have already bookmarked as interesting in a given category. There is also the blog search engine Technorati, which highlights news stories and blog posts that are gaining attention with the most popular stories of the hour right on the homepage. By utilizing these sources, you can greatly reduce the feeling of overwhelm that you cannot possibly know everything that's relevant to you or your client's needs.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional, with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
And thank you much, Shamin Abbas, here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. About to bring on Brendan Hodgson, Senior VP, Digital Corporate and Public Affairs of North America for Hilton and, or Hill and Knowlton, I should say. Brad, what do you have there?
You know, with the clunker program now over, a huge spike, I guess, and a shot in the arm for the car industry, and I thought it was a good idea. Now, I guess they can only get paid, the car dealers, for those deals. But what's interesting here, Ray, is Sirius XM Radio focusing now on used cars. With all the new cars sales suffering, Sirius XM CEO Mel Karmazin, a lot of people might refer to him as a used car salesman, says that the company will step up efforts to sign up people who buy used cars already equipped with satellite radio receivers, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, for example, Sirius XM is entering a deal to offer a 3-month trial to buyers of used Volvos. So if you get a used Volvo that already has the equipment in there, likely going to get an email or a snail mail offer to hook you up to Sirius XM, be knock on your door and offered personally.
And you'll only be able to pick up oldies on that channel. It'll be fine. Brendan Hodgson is Senior VP, Digital Corporate and Public Affairs, North America. For Hill and Knowlton, a Senior Vice President of the Digital Communications Group, Brendan provides strategic counsel and project leadership on all facets of digital PR and social media activation, including corporate and public affairs, online advocacy, crisis and issues management, stakeholder relations, and social marketing. He runs the 4th of July picnic as well, I think. His value is his ability to develop effective online strategies that integrate with traditional communications and public affairs methodologies, 10 years of experience in digital PR, Motorola, Petro-Canada, WestJet, and a bunch of other ones. State University of New York at Potsdam. Do you know where that is?
No.
It's in Potsdam, Brad. That's a trick question. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, Brendan's going to be with us here in just a moment. Aren't you glad you're here? I am, and we're glad Brendan's here, too, in just a moment. The Advertising Show being powered by Schiphol.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com, and a powerful platform called Tendency. We use it here at The Advertising Show, and we understand we have increased energy and reach. That's what they tell us. Seriously, it's true, though. So check it out at Schiphol.com. And back in just a minute with more here at The Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Men, nothing takes it off like Noxzema medicated shave.
And here we go, back with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. And out of Washington, D.C., the Senior Vice President, Digital Corporate and Public Affairs of North America, Brendan Hodgson, Hill & Knowlton. Brendan, it is a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for being here at The Advertising Show.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah, and as Ray read your bio there, it said, as I repeat, provide strategic counsel and project leadership on all facets of digital PR and social media activation. So there's not any one area that we're still working on, Brandon. Brendan, you cover them all. Is this correct?
Well, I think that's maybe a little bit too ambitious. I certainly do try and make sure I'm as well-rounded as can be. But really, as my title shows, my focus in the role that I'm in now is very much on the corporate communications, public affairs, crisis, and issues management side. That's where I think there's a lot of interesting activity happening, so that's where I like to sort of play in the game.
Well, good. And thank you for clarifying that. We'll focus in on some of those topics for today's chat, but I want to talk a little bit about have you weigh in on a recent study that you guys conducted. Your company research found in a study entitled "The Future of E-commerce is Social Commerce," as online shoppers, particularly younger people, are heavily influenced by social media and so-called Web 2.0 technologies. Let's talk a little bit, if you can, about what factors influence this consumer behavior, starting with, as your study points out, personal prior experience.
Well, I mean, it is very much, as we're seeing now, and in a lot of cases, when people are going out now and doing their buying, they're very much driven by not simply what the company is saying, but what others are saying as well. So people's existing experiences with that vendor or with that product or with the people behind the product. And given that we are now able to express those experiences and discuss them and share them, whether they're good or bad, in a variety of ways online and through various social tools and whatnot, this whole notion of social buying is really taking precedence over what we might have done previously. We're really being affected by people who we know and their experiences, but increasingly by sort of the aggregate of what other people's experiences are, whether we know them or not. You're just looking at TripAdvisor.com and other things like that, where you're seeing now many people piling in with their opinions on certain products, vendors, and companies, and the company's people.
Yeah, I noticed that one of the findings was that the younger generation predominantly is influenced by social media channels. No surprise there. But I found it interesting that traditional media remains a universal driver of influence, according to your study. Any comments on that?
Well, it's absolutely true. I mean, I think we are naive when we think that the role of the traditional media is in any way becoming less important than what it might have been. I think it's in many cases going to be as important, and in some cases even perhaps more important now, as we try to break through the clutter, we try to find voices that are credible. Certainly, the people we trust these days tend to be the people that we know and the people who sort of share the same kind of points of view and whatnot as we do, and those voices are going to become increasingly powerful. But I think the traditional media still is a place where we can hopefully find, if not an unbiased, a balanced and fair perspective on certain activities and products and technologies and whatnot. And I think that's still going to stand, although perhaps in a slightly different format and a slightly different way. I don't see that changing dramatically over in the next little while.
After a quick Twitter search, I found that H&K had a few Twitter accounts of their own. I'm curious, can social media, Brendan, like Twitter, benefit a firm like Hill & Knowlton?
I think it can. I think what it does is it allows us to do a couple of things. It allows us to obviously demonstrate, one, that we understand, the social media environment, the changing communications landscape. It obviously helps us build relationships and conversations with the people that we want to talk to, whether they're people within the business of public relations and marketing and advertising and communications, or it's the people that we're trying to reach out to on behalf of our clients. And obviously from an issues and crisis management context, I mean, you know, we want to be aware of how those tools can be used on our clients' behalf as well. And I think finally from sort of, you know, the strength of a Hill & Knowlton or any kind of agency is the intellectual capital of its people. So what we are also trying to do is demonstrate that by showing that we can, you know, we're linking out to articles that we find are interesting and adding perhaps some color and some perspective on that. So obviously trying to elevate our knowledge in the various spheres that we're hopefully knowledgeable in.
Well, staying with microblogging for a second, Brendan, give us your failures and successes using Twitter. Any advice there on both the upside and downside?
For Hill & Knowlton or for clients or anything?
I think in general for our listeners' benefit.
Well, I mean, I think where Twitterers tend to fail is when there's and you know, obviously, I'm looking at it from a more of a professional standpoint. You know, I think if companies and people like myself are using Twitter, we're trying to do it in many respects to add value, to demonstrate, you know, that to share information that we think is valuable and to make connections perhaps where they didn't happen before. And I think very much so if we start loading in or dumping in completely inane commentary or commentary that just is white noise, I don't think we're doing ourselves or anybody else any kind of favor as we do that. I say that purely in the context of what we're trying to do to advance our business activities and other things as well. I think where we do it right is certainly by, you know, very much connecting either to people or to information that can really provide value to our clients. And I think that goes almost for any kind of organization. Either they're providing greater visibility potentially into their business through the tweets that they have or into the people that are behind the business, or else they're providing some kind of value behind it, whether it's even just potentially information to clarify misinformation, but also to provide deals and links to ways to use products better and that kind of thing. So I think those are sort of how I would see how the good and bad of Twitter is really unfolding from sort of through my lens.
And it's good in and good out, but if you're doing junk and things that people don't really need or anything like that, it's the same old stuff that you used to get in the mailbox. It's junk mail and it goes into the trash basket and soon you opt out of that. So our special guest is Brendan Hodgson, who is a Senior Vice President of Digital and Corporate and Public Affairs North America for Hill & Knowlton here at the Advertising Show. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, we've got more in just a minute. Stay right here.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Do you know exactly how to read an Oreo? Well, to do it, you unscrew it very fast.
Hill & Knowlton is the company out of D.C., and our special guest is Brendan Hodgson, Senior Vice President, Digital Corporate and Public Affairs for North America. Brendan, it is such a pleasure to have you here on the Advertising Show. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Well, since one of your specialties, as you mentioned at the open of the interview, is crisis management, let's talk a little bit about that. I understand there's a so-called new crisis out there when it comes to crisis management. Talk a little bit about that, Brendan.
Well, what we're seeing are sort of incidents that are sort of happening and are sort of capturing people's attentions online. And they sort of, you know, gather in pace and they spread quite virally, and there's lots of mentions in Twitter and on Facebook, and then it jumps to the mainstream media, and you get a good sort of, you know, chunk of news coverage, which then again amplifies more so in the social media space, but tends not to have any traction and suddenly disappears after maybe, you know, a day or 2 days or 3 days. And these could be little events related to images of you know, employees perhaps doing something wrong or a bad ad that somebody is complaining about that captures somebody's attention. And you know, it's these little events now that are happening with much greater frequency that all of a sudden now companies have to face, well, what do I do about these kinds of things? You know, if I react too aggressively, am I going to give this crisis legs and perhaps harm my reputation even more? Or if I don't respond at all, is this thing really going to take off and perhaps become a crisis that truly affects my bottom line? But there's now this sort of event that happens in sort of the middle here, and it's really driven by how quickly now people can spread information and images and videos about events and activities that have taken place. And I think it's a new challenge that are facing businesses these days.
So with the permanent digital record of online commentary, reactions, whatever, doesn't that present a challenge for you guys? I mean, you know, that's that, even though the you know, conversation may slow down or go away after a few days, it's still out there.
It is definitely still out there, and I think what needs to happen and the way we are counseling our clients right now is that they need to acknowledge it. It's not enough to try and either bury your head in the sand or to really hope that everything goes away, because as you say correctly, there is a permanent record. But if alongside that permanent record, when somebody does go on and search a topic or an issue, if there is a response and an appropriate and a considered response and one that acknowledges the pain that might have been caused to a certain group or, you know, a certain customer base or whatever, then, you know, there can be seen that can hopefully demonstrate that the company was A, listening, cares about what is going on, and hopefully has demonstrated that it's taken the right actions to either address that issue or to mitigate that issue. And that's where we try and really counsel our clients now. We can't stop what is being said on Google and get stuff taken off. It's very difficult to do that. What we're really trying to do is really accentuate and amplify our clients' point of view on that.
You know, we had an author a few weeks ago, shifting gears for a moment, that wrote a book, Too Busy to Shop, Kelly Scalota, and she weighed in on, you know, basically how marketing to the multi-minded woman is not, you know, some are picking up on that, many are, and yet it's a huge market to be addressed and to be quantified. I understand that you've got some thoughts on the power of the mommy blogger, so to speak. We had an alpha mom on several years ago, Ray, as you recall, and mm-hmm. She was all about providing great information for mothers with young children, of course. Any thoughts on that, Brendan?
Well, I mean, without question, you know, I guess to sort of put it into parenthesis, the mommy bloggers are definitely a very vocal and certainly increasingly powerful group of influencers in the online space. You know, really, they're. But you know, we have to look at it. They're bloggers who obviously want to talk about their home life and their family life, and obviously they have a lot of purchasing power, as a lot of research goes out there and says. But you know, I think this simply just shows now how the power of social media to allow these voices to speak out and to connect with each other and to share information. And I think we've sort of seen that in a number of cases around issues of perhaps some inappropriate advertising that has come out that has really galvanized this audience. But also sort of the power of this group to really, you know, back to what we might have been speaking about earlier, is to really influence now in terms of recommendations and this whole notion of social buying. I mean, they're the ones who are utilizing a lot of the products out there and really taking the time to talk about these kinds of things. So clearly there is a lot of influence in this constituency. And again, it's driven very much by this new technology, which allows... It's really removing journalistic control over the information marketplace. It's giving everybody a voice. Yeah.
Very special guest here at the Advertising Show is Brendan Hodgson, Senior Vice President, Digital Corporate and Public Affairs, North America, for Hill and Knowlton out of Washington, D.C. With Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth here on the Advertising Show, we'll continue our conversation with Brendan in just a minute. Hope you stick around.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Hey, meet the swinger, Polaroid swinger.
Back with our special guest out of Washington, D.C. for one final segment. It's Brendan Hodgson, Senior Vice President, Digital Corporate and Public Affairs, North America for Hill & Knowlton. Brendan, it's great to have you here at the Advertising Show.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, Brendan, I'm sure many of our listeners corporate blogging or certainly have corporate blogging taking place with their organization or maybe an agency person that's been asked about that. I'd like to hear your thoughts on, you know, some of the do's and don'ts, some of the mistakes that you see being made out there when it comes to corporate blogging, and more so some of the positive things that you see happening today.
Well, let's start with the bad. I mean, I think, you know, some of the mistakes that are made are very much going in without a clear idea of what you're trying to do and with the blog. You know, a blog is meant to be sort of a more of a personal insider look at an organization, allowing a company to sort of delve deeper into issues. And I think what we tend to find is that a lot of companies tend to be using it simply as another way to talk about their products, to advertise, or sort of, you know, to shill their activities. And I don't think there's as much sort of authenticity as people expect from a blog versus their traditional advertising channels or media channels that are being used. So I think one of the real challenges is for companies to allow either their staff or their people to really kind of open up and talk in a more human voice and be a bit more balanced, to acknowledge perhaps that there might be something going on that may not be quite as positive as we want it to be. So I think that's sort of one area where there's some real challenges. It's really shifting your voice, and we're seeing that with a lot of clients. From a positive side, though, you know, when you do allow your staff to really start talking in their own voice and really, you know, sharing their excitement of working for a company or being involved in something in the development of a product or in some activity that they feel very proud of, that can be one of your most sort of powerful assets. I use the term that these guys can be both, you know, positive guardians of the brand or very negative guardians of the brand as well. The voice of your staff, of your employees, can sometimes be your greatest asset, and if not managed appropriately, and if you're not using the right strategies and the tactics, it can also cause you a lot of harm as well. So I think there's sort of getting the strategy right and really finding the right voices to talk are the sort of the two strategies people need to be considering.
You know, there was a time when corporate blogging out there was done covertly, I think. In a lot of cases, the corporate blogger was masquerading as a consumer, and that backlash got exposed, and I think it backfired certainly on a lot of companies out there attempting to, do some window dressing on their own company under the guise of just being Joe Sixpack out there. Does that still go on today?
I think less and less. I mean, it's just, you know, with for a lot of companies now, I think they're realizing that the risk of being discovered, the harm that can really befall an organization's reputation and can really harm the brand is just too great to be willing to allow that kind of thing happen. It probably still happens, and I'm sure it does happen inadvertently, that there are bloggers out there who probably just don't know better or don't know the potential damage that their activities could cause, and I think they're probably doing it in a very rogue sort of way. But I think we're increasingly seeing now companies sort of establishing policies that are helping guide their staff in terms of how they should be using blogs, ensuring that there is transparency, that they're always being very open and forthright about who they are and how they're commenting. And so I think that while it does happen, I'm hoping that is happening less and less, because I think there's just too many examples now of what can happen when people are found out and when things like that are uncovered.
eventually you're going to be found out, I think, is the best advice. Let's talk a little bit as we wrap up this segment, crowdsourcing. For those that may not be aware of crowdsourcing, obviously a short definition might be just using your constituency, your consumers out there to get feedback on a number of things with your brand or your products or services. Crowdsourcing. It's a hot topic nowadays.
And let's do that in 60 seconds or less, okay?
It's certainly a hot topic, and I think this is one of the great sort of vehicles that sort of transcends the traditional sort of communications marketing side. I mean, you know, from my perspective, I think crowdsourcing is a great way to demonstrate that you're listening to your customers, but at the same time, you're suddenly realizing that there's possibly great value that's coming back from them. When you're asking them a question, how can I make my product better? How can we function better as a company? Where could we better spend our philanthropic dollars or our marketing dollars? All of a sudden, you're getting great value that you might never have seen before, and that might never have emerged from within the company, but is now coming at you from without. And I think that is the great value, sort of the double value of crowdsourcing. It's a great sort of reputation enhancer, and it's also a great tool for innovation.
And with that said, Brendan, thank you for being a part of the show today. We've enjoyed the conversation and learned quite a bit here as well.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schilling's Brad Forsyth back with more in just a moment. Stay with us.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas, and this is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world, waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details, while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a PR campaign to include people who couldn't make it to the G8 rally, they got 53,000 people to join a virtual protest and a campaign that won 2 international creative awards. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put us to the test. Just go to openad.net and give us a try. What have you got to lose? The future starts here.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schilling and Brad Forsyth.
From San Francisco comes...
Rice, a-roni, the San Francisco treat. Rice, a-roni, the flavor can't be beat.
Thanks again to our special guest today, Brendan Hodgson, Senior Vice President for Digital and Corporate Public Affairs North America for Hill and Knowlton, here with us here on The Advertising Show. Next week, by the way, Thomas Harpointer, CEO of AIS Media. And we'll talk to Thomas and see what he has to say. Brad, do you, I was going to say, do you know anything about Thomas? Do you know Thomas? Is he a neighbor?
Well, actually, AIS is a firm that does a lot of different things, but in particular, we're going to talk to him about sponsorship, sports sponsorship, some digital opportunities out there that are not going to be a duplication of what you heard today. It's going to go in another direction, but they were involved in NASCAR and some other things, so which is challenging today. NASCAR is struggling a bit than from its height of popularity a few years ago, but
sure.
It should be interesting.
The high price of beer, yeah, that's a thing. Something like that. And right, exactly. Hey, we've got Gene Bliss coming up here momentarily here at The Advertising Show. Ray Schilling and Brad Forsyth, what did I have here? Oh, I know what it is. You know, Volkswagen, for the longest time, has been with Crispin Porter. And basically, that went bye-bye. Basically, they were hired back in 2005 after former Mini client Kerry Martin moved the then $400 million account out of the Arnold Boston agency. That in 10 years working on the brand introduced the new Beetle and Drivers Wanted tag. Crispin is the produced a body of work that was breakthrough attention getting and decided the offbeat. So consequently, Volkswagen is preparing to unpimp its ride and basically look for a safer creative road beyond Crispin Porter. Well, that doesn't make any sense to me, but and that's probably what the folks at down in Miami are saying as well. It'll be interesting to see what the new safer spots and advertising sound like. In the meantime, here's a company that does a great job with everything that they do. It's W.L. Gore. And Gene Bliss is going to tell us more about that today here at the Advertising Show.
Welcome to the Customer Experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
You know, it's nearly impossible to buy a ski jacket without seeing the Gore-Tex tag hanging from the garment. W.L. Gore makes, among many other things, dental floss, guitar strings, and surgical products, and has been named pound for pound the most innovative company in America by Fast Company, and is revered for its ability to innovate around the globe. What lies behind this ability to innovate is what founder Bill Gore decided to focus on as he began the business. And that's how people inside the company come to make decisions among themselves. At W.L. Gore, the belief is that people will step up and deliver when they are not regulated. This radical idea for a culture in which leaders emerge has been sustained throughout W.L. Gore's existence as an organization. Through democratic decision-making and an innovative culture, they have grown to become a $2.4 billion company. It is only one of five companies who's been on Fortune's Best Companies to Work For list for 25 years since that list was initiated. Do you practice democratic decision-making?
This has been your weekly installment of the Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
You're also going to find that story, that particular feature, in her new book, Jean's new book. It's called I Love You More Than My Dog, Five Decisions That Drive Extreme Customer Loyalty in Good Times and Bad. And these are the bad times, just in case you haven't been reading the newspaper. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, watching the news, because, well, I won't even go there about the newspaper thing. So it's good stuff. So look for that book. I don't know when it's coming out, Brad. We've got a pre-copy here. But
last I heard, it was, I think, October, November, something like that. But we'll be making sure people know about
that.
Okay.
So it's when we – let's see. Oh, yeah, it says the middle of October here. So that'll be good.
Yeah.
Unless you want to buy my copy. Oh, I can't do that. Never mind.
It'll be on eBay later today.
Wouldn't that be a bad thing to do?
Uh-oh.
So, anyway, go. You've got something there. We got a couple of minutes here.
Well, you know, we had the CEO of Gas TV, as I recall, Ray, Gas Station TV on several years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently NBC Universal will deliver local and national programming and sell local ads that will appear on television screens at up to 1,000 gas stations through the new deal with Gas Station TV. NBC content will be seen by 30 million viewers.
Oh, really? So 30 million viewers on 1,000 screens now? That's incredible.
Per month at 1,000 gas stations, not 1,000 screens.
Okay.
You know, how many pumps per station times, you know, one per pump.
Not including ethanol or diesel. Right, exactly, right.
Gotcha. You know, I mean, let's face it. When was the last time you saw an empty gas station? I don't see them empty anymore. So, you know, I think it's smart on NBC's part to do that. I don't know if anybody's going to stand there pumping their gas long enough to catch much of the program, but, you know, they'll get a little little sampling out there and get it out there.
Well, they had the here in the Houston market, they had the Murphy stations with that, and I've actually, you know, been to one of the Murphys because they've got cheap gas, and it's kind of interesting to watch. It's well done. Absolutely,
you know,
well done.
It could end up taking a half hour to do your gas because you wanted to stay tuned to a program that caught your interest.
Yeah, exactly right. They should have a DVR included there or something you could check in with your favorite show. If they put Hulu on there, I would do that. That'd be a great idea.
That's true.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Yeah. Thomas Harpointer is coming up next week, CEO of AIS Media, not to be confused with AIG. Bad idea. And but anyway, Thomas will be with us. Hope you will as well. Here at theadvertisingshow.com, tell a friend about the show. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. And again, tell your friends about the show. It's one of those things that's been around and has a lot of opportunity to go back and listen to some great podcasts as well, since September of 2001, as a matter of fact. So a lot of stuff up there at the Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production.